As I was reading and reflecting on this text this week, a song came to me. Some of you may know the song, some may not, but I'll share it with you, just the chorus as I start. It's a larger hook for the sermon as a whole, I think. Goes like this. Oh, Jesus is a rock in a weary land, a weary land, a weary land. Oh, Jesus is a rock in a weary land, a shelter in a time of storm. Last summer was the hardest summer of my life, despite how hard this summer is. Personal things were hard. It was just after the end of my marriage, after years of struggle to sort things out, failing to find a space for reconciliation. It's still a tender and difficult place for me. Work things weren't any better. The culture of my former organization had gone toxic with accusations and gossip and distrust, undermining everything good we were trying to do. I literally had a stress reaction going into the office. In my life, I felt at sea. I felt the storm and the waves beating my face. I felt like the song I was able to sing was Psalm 69. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no foothold. I have come into deep waters, and the flood sweeps over me. I am weary with crying. My throat is parched. My eyes grow dim with waiting for my God. Let's imagine for a moment. As I asked you for your dinner groups, think with me about your answer to the question, when did you notice a strong wind blowing, battering you, pushing you over? When did you feel frightened or begin to sink in your life? I know some of you are in that place now. Some of you have been there recently. And in some respects, we're all living in that place in the United States right now because of the upheaval from the pandemics of COVID, plus racism and unaccountable police violence, especially against Black people. Take a moment just for yourself and think of what emotions you associate with your experience of sinking down. What does it feel like? This is what the text detailing the story with Jesus and Peter doesn't tell us exactly. But it's the place where we live when we experience such things. And I think putting ourselves as best we can in that place opens up for us the psychological or spiritual power of this text and what it might offer us as a way to engage its ancient story as a living story for us. So let me just say a couple of things about the text and then return to where we are and the challenges that we face. In the earliest writings about Jesus, there aren't any mention of these miracle stories, the feeding of the multitudes, which we had last week, the walking on water. It's clear that when the Gospels were written a full generation later, the Gospel writers, each in their own way, told stories so that the hearers would agree as our text ends and be able to confess about Jesus, "You are truly the anointed of God." There's a rhetorical purpose to the inclusion of these miracles in these gospels written a generation or more after Jesus died. This particular story is in Mark's gospel, it's in Matthew's gospel, it's in John's gospel. And Matthew, the version we have in front of us, is writing in the immediate aftermath of the Jewish rebellion of 66 and the traumatic Roman crackdown in 70 that included the siege of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple that had served as the heart of the nation for over 500 years. So the socio-literary sense of the text is both the need to tell a story such that Jesus has divine power and his power can calm the storms of life they are experiencing, personal storms, social storms, political storms. It's so important to me to note that Jesus goes to a place alone to pray. It feels human and relatable and real. We too need that time for prayer, for silence, for reflection, for communion with God, for renewal. He'd sent the disciples on the way ahead of him across the sea, and on the way across the sea, a rough storm arose, and they were battered by the waves. And we too, it feels like, can feel we're battered by the waves, waves of loneliness, waves of depression, of self-doubt, waves of fear, of feeling unsafe, waves of insecurity about work, about relationships, about our physical safety, waves of pain at the loss of loved ones, waves of anger at the arrogance and violence of the state against people who have already suffered so much. Jesus says to his disciples in the midst of the storm, in words full of love and mercy, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter's the impulsive disciple always. And here again, he wants to get to Jesus sooner. And so he asks him, "Can I come to you before you get here?" Rather than waiting with the others on the boat till Jesus arrives. And Jesus says, "Come." And Peter is overcome by his own fears. He feels the strong winds against him and he begins to go under. Taken literally, it's just a story about Peter, but taken as a story about coping with the chaos of life, we can see ourselves in Peter's place. We can feel ourselves beginning to go under. We can cry out with him, "Lord, save me." And Jesus responds immediately with actions that say in the action what he said previously, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." He reaches out his hand to Peter to bring him safely to the boat. One could hear Jesus' comment to Peter as a rebuke. We had a debate about this at Bible study on Wednesday night. "You of little faith, finger wagging, why did you doubt?" However, that wasn't the only interpretation we came up with at Bible study, and it actually harkens back to a sermon Andy preached during the Easter season, reflecting on Jesus' comments on the road to Emmaus that could be read similarly in a dismissive way. We thought maybe in the context of Jesus' actions, this comment sounded more loving, more like a parent urging a child to grow into the conviction that they can do it on their own. I think of a parent helping a child to learn to ride a bike. "You can do it. Close your eyes and see yourself going down the sidewalk without those training wheels." So I wonder how Jesus comes to us today. From whose mouth do we hear, "Take heart and do not be afraid"? If this is to be a living word, a story of now and not just then we claim and confess that Jesus is present to us now in community. As we are with and for each other in the world, Jesus is present. At the end of Matthew's gospel, Jesus lists all the ways people are suffering and says, "As you have done it to the least of these, you have done it to me." So I think about that, like how we are in a sense Jesus to one another and receive others being Jesus to us. I was with my younger son, Finn, this week. And I remember when he was little, I suppose this is a pastor's kid problem, but when he was little, he would do kind things to his friends and then say to them, "I am Jesus to you." It was his understanding of what it means to offer mercy and love and solidarity to the needs of another. In our community, in our world, we are called by our faith to a reciprocal economy of presence and care and healing. We are called by our faith to reach out and reach out to someone who needs us to be Jesus, or to be available when someone can be Jesus to us. In some larger social sense, it's how I understand the work of social justice. Some of us are sinking. There are literally crying out as waves crash over them. Putting our hand out may take many forms. It may be a phone call to console a friend or get out the vote or demand justice for Breonna Taylor. A hand to hold so that we feel less alone, or hands to hold across a line of protesters to hold back the violence of those sworn to serve and protect. Jesus, Matthew wants us to know, is the very power of God mixed up in our troubles. And because that is true, because he is in the boat with us, we can rest. This morning, Hallie led a beautiful loving kindness invitation to close her reflection time, and I'd like to share it with you tonight. She said, if we hold our hands out for one another, we can catch each other when we fall so that none of us will sink into the water. So let's practice that right now. Can you hold your hands out in front of you? Now close your eyes and imagine someone you want to catch. Do you feel more like you need to be caught? Do you need someone's hand to grab onto, or do you feel steady and you can reach out your hand to someone who needs it? Now draw that person or yourself to your heart. Draw your hands to your heart. And send thoughts and prayers to yourself or to that person, loving thoughts. And then take your hands cupped together, and the intentions that you feel for that person who needs to be caught, whether it's you or someone else or the world, and blow those intentions toward them. Amen.